Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Okay, let's unpack this. We are diving into a source that feels less like a traditional urban legend and more like a fever dream. You know, one born from the deepest anxieties of mandatory suburban engagement. This is the story of Soufflé and the horrifyingly rigid social structure she enforced in a place called Perfect Town.
It is, I think, arguably one of the most chilling pieces of dark satire we've encountered.
For sure.
Our primary sources today are the foundational text, Freshness is a Priority, Inspector's Choice, and then a later analysis titled The Dinner Party Hostess Who Turned Missing Neighbors into Pâté.
Right.
And our mission really is to go beyond the gore, beyond the, you know, the shocking parts, and analyze the precise mechanics of this suburban social control. I mean, how was this terror sustained, and what does it tell us about the high cost of noncompliance in any rigid social setting?
And setting is so crucial, isn't it? It's instantly recognizable. Perfect Town.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking about the ultimate American dreamscape.
Oh, God.
Manicured lawns, the absolute silence, streets where nothing is ever out of place.
It's that visual perfection that immediately signals that something is deeply systemically wrong.
Exactly. It's too perfect.
Precisely. The source material immediately establishes that this perfection wasn't organic, it was policed. And the enforcer wasn't a shadowy corporation or, you know, some kind of bureaucratic entity.
No.
But one single individual who wielded the power of hospitality like a weapon.
Enter Soufflé. She is introduced as the undisputed queen of the kitchen. But that title is, I mean, it's a vast understatement, right?
A massive understatement.
Her control went far beyond whose petunias were thriving or which sherry was appropriate for afternoon tea. She dictated the entire social and, indeed, the existential rhythm of Perfect Town.
And what's essential for you, the listener, to grasp immediately is that foundational tension. For the residents, attending Soufflé's events was not a choice.
Not at all.
It wasn't about being polite. It was about survival. And that moves the entire narrative out of the realm of etiquette and directly into the realm of mandatory social conformity enforced with lethal consequences.
This isn't just about a demanding hostess forcing you to eat her lumpy potato salad.
No.
This is about mandatory social interaction under the threat of permanent erasure. It's that feeling.
Yeah.
You know, that you have to attend that awkward high-stakes networking event or that mandatory office party.
Right.
But the stakes are ratcheted up by this just overwhelming existential dread.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about terror served meticulously, perhaps in a vintage casserole dish.
To understand how the system of terror functioned, we have to start with the core mechanism of control. The invitation.
The invitation.
Yeah. The sources are absolutely clear that Soufflé's dinner parties were not invitations in the traditional sense. They were repeatedly referred to as summons or simply defined as mandatory events.
Right.
And this immediately establishes a high-stakes, controlled environment where social rules are law.
That distinction is everything, isn't it? An invitation implies free will.
Exactly.
Summons implies the surrender of autonomy. You realize pretty quickly that this entire community exists in a state of controlled compliance. They might appear to be free homeowners with their own private property, but they are functionally subjects under a culinary monarch. The deed to their house is less important than their attendance record at the next potluck.
It's a textbook example of social coercion made explicit. In, you know, healthy societies, conformity is enforced subtly through fear of judgment or exclusion or damaging one's reputation.
Yes, social pressure.
But here, Soufflé just cuts right through the nuance. The rule is simple, direct, and universally understood. You show up, you eat what's served, and you maintain your position in the social order.
And if you don't?
You deviate, you cease to exist in the context of the town. It's that simple.
And the terror isn't just implied. It's woven into the very fabric of their social conversation right from the start through the infamous disappearance pattern.
Yes.
The chilling pattern established early in the narrative is delivered with this this terrifying simplicity.
Mm-hmm.
If you missed one dinner party, the source states you were never seen again.
And the psychological impact of that, the normalization of absence, is what makes this legend so compelling.
Right.
Initially, the sources suggest that this was treated, ironically, as a dark local joke. You can just imagine the uncomfortable laughter at the supermarket.
Oh, yeah, like, oh, poor Mr. Jenkins, I hear he missed the souffle last week. Guess he just disappeared.
Exactly like that. But the sources stress that over time, as the pattern repeated with frightening predictability, that dark humor just, it dissipated.
It stopped being funny.
It ceased to be a joke and became an established, unwritten, terrifying law of nature.
I really want to spend some time on that psychological progression.
Yeah.
Because it explains why the survivors kept showing up.
It does.
Think about the bystander effect combined with a kind of learned helplessness. When Mrs. Higgins misses a party and just vanishes, everyone attributes it to the powerful hostess.
They don't rebel.
They don't rebel. They internalize the mechanism of terror.
Every
single subsequent attendance is an act of acknowledging Soufflé's absolute right to consume the non-compliant.
And that internalization is the genius of Soufflé's control. The community becomes complicit in its own oppression.
Mm.
They are actively suppressing any desire to reach out to the missing or even to ask about them, because asking questions implies a challenge to the monarchy.
So the silence.
The silence surrounding the vanished neighbors becomes as oppressive as the threat itself.
It's the ultimate high-pressure loyalty test. Every dinner is a renewed pledge of allegiance and declining. I mean, declining means you are not just being rude, you are attempting to defect from the entire social contract of Perfect Town.
And monarchs, especially those who run their domain with such culinary precision, do not tolerate treason.
No, they don't.
Furthermore, this dynamic illuminates how Soufflé maintained her status as the queen of the kitchen. Her power wasn't derived from wealth or political office.
Right.
It was derived from her ability to enforce this existential ultimatum. She didn't need to brandish a weapon. She just needed to send an engraved card.
Her control dictated the entire social economy. You could lose your investments, but as long as you kept eating Soufflé's food, you retained your guaranteed spot in society.
And here is where the deeper satirical element resonates with real-world anxiety. You mentioned corporate hierarchies.
Yeah.
Soufflé's system perfectly mirrors the often unspoken requirements of professional or social climbing, you know, the mandatory after-hour socializing.
Oh, for sure. The necessity of appearing enthusiastic and compliant.
And the severe, though non-lethal, penalties for being sidelined or choosing personal time over group participation. Soufflé merely literalized the consequences. If you don't participate fully, you are metaphorically consumed by the system.
And the veneer of polite suburban society provides the perfect camouflage for this mechanism. Everything is run under the guise of generous hosting, good manners, and, you know, delicious cuisine.
Absolutely. So to reject the hostess isn't just rejecting a person. It's rejecting the fundamental, flawless, perfect structure of Perfect Town itself.
And rejecting perfection in this narrative
mm-hmm.
is the greatest sin.
It is.
I wonder, though, do the sources hint at any internal resistance? Like, was there any moment when the community considered collective action?
The sources suggest that the control mechanism was just too swift and too effective. The penalty for non-compliance disappearance was instant and permanent.
So there was no time.
There was no room for organized dissent because the remaining residents were too consumed by the immediate need for self-preservation.
All their energy was just focused on surviving the next dinner.
Any spare energy was devoted to smiling at the table and complimenting the wine. The fear of being the next absent ingredient trumped all desire for freedom.
So we've established the non-negotiable rule of law. Attendance equals survival. Now we have to turn to the mechanics of the food itself, because the menu is where the horror ceases to be psychological and becomes, well, visceral.
This is where we introduce the crucial supporting character, Herb, the gardener.
Ah.
Herb is the quiet engine of Soufflé's operation. His role is not simply horticulture. It is the cultivation of the sinister. The sources repeatedly note that Herb grows herbs and spices that didn't exist in nature.
Right, or don't look like anything from a grocery store.
Exactly.
Herb is the silent enabler. He's the black market supplier of the necessary unknown ingredients required for this specialized menu.
He is.
He is operating outside the norms of horticulture. just as Soufflé operates outside the norms of hospitality. He's ensuring the flavor of the terror is distinct and, I guess, untraceable.
His silent presence throughout the narrative is highly significant. He represents the deep-seated rot beneath Perfect Town's flawless exterior.
That's a great way to put it.
It suggests that this isn't just Soufflé's individual madness. It's a systemic venture requiring a specialized infrastructure. You need unique ingredients, ingredients that perhaps serve to mask the true disturbing nature of the main protein.
Yeah.
He is cultivating abnormality within the highly controlled environment of the suburban garden plot.
And if Herb handles the foundation, the raw materials, Soufflé handles the presentation.
Mm.
And the sensory details provided by the sources regarding the meat served at these mandatory dinners are maybe the most unsettling element for the compliant residents.
It's deeply disturbing.
Guests consistently found the meat had an odd taste. It was familiar in a way they can't place.
That phrase is just. It's a masterful piece of narrative manipulation. It's the story twisting the knife, slowly.
It really is.
The familiarity is deeply personal, perhaps hitting on a subconscious, suppressed realization of what they are consuming. It forces the guests into a horrific cognitive dissonance.
Right. They know something is terribly wrong, maybe even recognizing a ghost of a flavor, but they have to choose to ignore it.
They must choose to ignore it for the sake of survival.
It's psychological horror masquerading as a culinary review.
Mm.
They're tasting the loss, the absence, in a physical caloric form.
They are actively participating in the erasure of their former neighbors, even if their conscious mind refuses to admit the horrific truth.
And the fact that they keep eating, because the alternative is being eaten, is a profound and disturbing statement on the human drive for survival and the overwhelming power of complicity.
So to justify this distinctly unsettling flavor and texture, which must surely invite questions from her guests.
Of course.
Soufflé provides a technical-sounding, highly polished explanation. She claims it is her secret forever seal, a special preservation technique that keeps things perpetually fresh.
Forever seal. It sounds like something you'd see advertised on a late-night infomercial for food storage containers.
Exactly. But in the context of the source material, it's a chilling euphemism.
For sure.
It's clearly a justification for preservation that transcends mere culinary science and enters the realm of horror. She is claiming mastery over decay itself.
But that raises a fascinating paradox, doesn't it? It challenges her own logic.
How so?
Well, if she claims mastery over decay, why is she still so focused on freshness? Why does she constantly need new ingredients?
That's a brilliant point. The forever seal isn't about halting time for the food. It's about permanently freezing the disobedient in a state of stasis, turning them into immutable commodities.
Ah, I see.
The fear of decay in Perfect Town isn't about food going bad. It's about the social order crumbling. The seal preserves the memory of her power, forever reminding the others of the consequences of dissent.
So the seal guarantees that the consequences of noncompliance are permanent immobility. You transition from an active, living member of the community to a preserved, perpetual element within her system.
Exactly. You become a permanent fixture, whether that's on the basement wall or incorporated into the next pâté.
Nothing goes to waste.
Nothing. And we must remember the deadly pattern that links refusal to fate. The source is concerned that behind the smiles and the carefully poured wine, neighbors who passed on an invitation inevitably stopped being seen around town.
Which links the refusal of hospitality directly to their status as potential ingredients.
It does. The social rejection is simultaneously the execution warrant and the requisition order for raw materials.
It highlights the ultimate dark joke of suburban living. The insistence on homogeneity and the severe punishment for daring to stand out. Or in this case, daring to stay home.
Soufflé ensures that everyone is equally available, either as a diner or as dinner. There is no middle ground, only 100% compliance.
And the refusal of hospitality isn't just a social misstep. It's an open declaration that you reject Soufflé's entire system of perfection.
The moment you decline, you transition from being a compliant subject to a raw resource required for the sustaining of the system.
And that fear is what keeps the tables full and the social order running smoothly.
It is.
So the operation is running smoothly.
Uh-huh.
It is self-contained, self-enforcing, and terrifyingly efficient. But every well-run horror show eventually faces a challenge from the outside world.
Mm.
And that brings us to the sudden and almost absurd intrusion of external authority.
The arrival of the health inspector is the crucial narrative device that forces the private horror of Perfect Town into the light of bureaucratic reality. And the source material immediately gives us a clue that this is an event outside the normal run of things by citing the date of the inspection, February 30th.
February 30th.
Yeah.
A non-existent date. Why do the sources include this detail? Is it a typo or something more symbolic?
I believe it's highly symbolic. February 30th signifies an event that shouldn't logically exist, a moment outside the normal flow of time.
Cool.
Or simply the narrative's way of signaling the sheer absurdity of governmental authority attempting to regulate this mythical horror structure.
So reality itself had to bend to allow an official investigation into Perfect Town.
It seems so. It's the moment when bureaucratic normalcy crashes into supernatural social horror.
And the health inspector arrives unannounced, seeking to apply standard regulations, temperature checks, hygiene standards to a situation that fundamentally defies sanity.
And his initial impression sets the stage for the deception. Instead of the expected, comforting domestic smell of baking or pies, the suburban ideal, the Swolf estate, he is hit by the scent of bleach.
That stark contrast is the story just screaming the truth at you, isn't it?
It is. Bleach is the smell of industrial-scale cleaning, of sanitization, meant not for cooking surfaces, but for hiding a crime.
Right. It signifies that cleanup, maintenance, and the erasure of evidence, not comfort or culinary art, is the true operational priority here.
Soufflé is more concerned with eliminating any trace of the past than baking scones for the inspection.
Yet, despite the obvious, overwhelming red flags, the impossible date, the industrial scent of cleanup soufflé maintains her unnerving, perfect composure.
She's completely unfazed.
She adheres flawlessly to the script of the law-abiding hostess. She offers to show the inspector her fully compliant storage in the basement.
She is confident, perhaps because she genuinely believes her standards of perfection are so high that they will satisfy even the most demanding bureaucracy.
You think? So in her mind, the meticulous organization of her system is the very definition of compliant storage, even if the contents are horrific.
I think so. She uses the language of regulation against the regulator.
And then comes the dissent. The sources provide a detailed, grotesque reveal of the basement scene. It is described as a nightmare where the walls were lined with thousands of airtight containers.
And let's pause on that scale. Thousands.
It's unbelievable.
This is not a hobbyist criminal. This is an industrialized, meticulously organized system of social enforcement executed over a long, deliberate period.
The sheer geometry and scale of the storage units underscore the terrifying efficiency of her control. It's not just a basement.
It's a museum of compliance failures.
Wow. And the contents, I mean, they make the horror intensely personal. Each container featuring a face suspended behind the plastic, perfectly preserved under the forever seal.
And the details are crucial here. These aren't just vague victims. They are named individuals driving home the specific personal nature of Soufflé's justice.
Yes, the sources name Mrs. Higgins, the mailman, and the mayor.
By preserving these figures, from the average neighbor, Mrs. Higgins, to the civic leader, the mayor, and the essential service provider, the mailman soufflé confirms that no one, regardless of social standing, is exempt from her mandatory social code.
She is literally consuming the entire hierarchy and essential infrastructure of Perfect Town.
They are trophies, yes, but more importantly, they are silent, petrified warnings to everyone who remains.
So as the inspector takes in this nightmarish vision, this meticulously organized, airtight graveyard of non-compliant soufflé delivers her final chilling line.
Yes.
The ultimate justification for her actions, spoken with unnerving calm. Freshness is a priority.
That statement encapsulates the entire dark satire. It takes a mundane health and safety maxim and twists it into a horrific moral code.
Right.
For Soufflé, freshness means maintaining the status quo, eliminating dissent immediately, and ensuring that her resources, her neighbors, are utilized before they can spoil the social contract.
It's a grotesque, relentless commitment to perfect quality control.
It is.
But the scene isn't complete without the quiet presence of the accomplice. Herb is found in the corner, still fulfilling his role, smoking a pipe.
Mm.
But the unsettling detail that confirms his dark complicity is the smell. The pipe smells like burning hair.
Herb's quiet role as the executioner and processor is cemented right there. If Soufflé handles the ideology and the preservation, Herb handles the unpleasant, necessary preparation.
So the smell of burning hair suggests he is involved in the pre-processing steps.
Perhaps sanitization, sterilization, or the initial gruesome steps required before the forever seal is applied.
He is the loyal, quiet executioner, handling the messy details that Soufflé's perfect kitchen must avoid.
Yes.
So the inspector, finally understanding the true nature of his inspection, panics. He turns to run, desperate to escape this monument to manufactured suburban horror.
Mm-hmm.
But he slips. And where does he slip? On the freshly waxed floor.
And this is the final, darkly ironic twist that brings the entire satirical structure crashing down. The standards of suburban neatness and meticulous maintenance.
The very perfection the inspector was ostensibly sent to regulate and uphold.
Become the instrument of his destruction. He is defeated not by an overt weapon or a struggle, but by the hypervigilant adherence to domestic social compliance.
He is undone by the clean, polished surface of Perfect Town itself.
At the moment he slips, the system wins. The external bureaucracy fails because it cannot withstand the sheer, uncompromising perfection it was meant to oversee.
Soufflé's standards are simply too high, even for the regulators.
And the conclusion of this legend is swift, brutal, and profoundly disturbing. It's designed to cement Soufflé's continued unchallenged dominance. The operation demonstrates terrifying efficiency.
Right. The immediate aftermath occurs the very next day.
The very next day.
The day after the inspector's tragic, waxy demise, every home in Perfect Town receives a mandatory gift basket. And inside that basket, a new pâté called Inspector's Choice.
The sheer audacity of this rebranding is just, it's breathtaking. Soufflé doesn't just eliminate the threat, she turns the threat into a commodity and forces the remaining compliant residents to literally consume the evidence of their failed liberation. It is the ultimate statement of dominance.
She turns the official authority figure into the signature product of her kitchen.
Exactly.
Inspector's Choice. It is a mockery of judgment, of taste, of regulatory oversight.
It implies that even the inspector himself, through his fate, ultimately validated her choice of ingredients.
It normalizes the terror and transforms his demise into an accepted and possibly premium culinary option for the remaining residents.
It forces the town to collectively and literally swallow the truth.
And compounding this total absorption of authority, Herb is seen driving the inspector's car wearing his hat.
The complete and total absorption of the official authority figure is confirmed. The inspector is gone, not just physically, but his identity and symbols of power have been transferred directly to the accomplice, the silent enabler.
Herb's elevation is the final twist. The quiet worker inherits the status symbols of the defeated bureaucrat.
The system of terror continues, simply replacing the necessary parts and upgrading the operational management.
And this signals that the operation is frighteningly resilient and ongoing. Soufflé is immediately seen planning her next luncheon.
There is no pause, no moment of accountability. For the residents of Perfect Town, the lesson is delivered via a gift basket of pâté and reinforced by the sight of Herb driving the official vehicle. Dissent is not just punished, it is incorporated.
The legend then ends with a single potent thematic rule delivered as the final word on Perfect Town's social code. In this town, leftovers are a crime.
This concise, perfect rule synthesizes the entire horror show into one absolute mandate. It means several things simultaneously. First, there is zero tolerance for waste, no raw material, no defiant neighbor, no part of the non-compliant is discarded.
Okay. Second,
compliance must be 100%. The system must perpetually consume those who resist to maintain its own perfect, sanitized, and functioning existence.
Leftovers are a crime is the absolute command against inefficiency and dissent. It ensures that the cycle of consumption and enforcement will continue indefinitely, securing Soufflé's rule in perpetuity.
You must either participate fully or you will be processed fully. And the definition of participation is perpetual, cheerful consumption.
The genius of the satire is how it uses culinary language to describe a machine of human reduction.
It is. Every time they are forced to eat, they are reaffirming their place and confirming the fate of those who dared to sit it out. It's a terrifying loop where the only way to avoid becoming an ingredient is to endlessly consume the evidence of previous nonconformity.
So we've tracked the rigid rule of the queen, the strange ingredients that fuel the operation, the shocking inspection that tried and failed to dismantle it, and the brazen aftermath where the authority figure was literally consumed and rebranded. It is a perfect, terrifying microcosm of horror built entirely on bad manners and enforced hospitality.
To recap our journey through the terrifyingly neat streets of Perfect Town, we've analyzed how the insidious nature of control masqueraded as mere hospitality.
Right.
The core mechanics were the mandatory nature of the invitations, the chillingly familiar ingredients, the technical facade of the forever seal, and the swift, total absorption of external authority into the system.
The source material is a potent warning about the dangers of demanding social perfection.
It really is.
And if we boil all that down, we want to leave you with one core insight that encapsulates the entire narrative, the ultimate defense against suburban tyranny.
Okay.
Sometimes the most dangerous people in a perfect neighborhood aren't the ones who shout or cause a scene. They're the ones who insist you try just one more bite.
That's powerful. And this source material really encourages us to consider the broader implications, far beyond the fictional horror.
Definitely.
What social mandatory dinners are we, in our own lives, attending out of fear of being excluded or sidelined or, you know, consumed by the group consensus?
And what is the true unseen cost of saying no to perpetual compliance?
Exactly.
Think about the professional pressure to always say yes, the social media pressure to always present a perfect life, or the neighborhood pressure to participate in every single function.
The legend suggests that social expectations, when driven by a singular, rigid vision of flawlessness, can quickly escalate from polite suggestions into absolute existential commands.
So we have to constantly question whose idea of freshness we are complying with and what happens to the leftovers in our own communities.
The difference between souffle and our own modern pressures is merely the lack of a forever seal. The erasure, the silencing, and the rebranding of dissent happens every day, just slightly more subtly than in Perfect Town.
We hope this deep dive gave you pause for thought the next time someone insists you join the block party or sample their special pâté. For a full breakdown of the sources, freshness is a priority, and all the related chilling tales in the Inspector Story Index, you can find more information online.
Join us next time for another deep dive where we tear apart the hidden layers of reality and legend, finding the horror beneath the perfect facade.
Find us and more stories like this on our feed and wherever you follow your deepest anxieties at Inspector Story.